the last stat that I heard was you had you have what 55,000 employees, and you're doing something like $25 billion a year in revenue. Is that still the accurate number?
That's roughly right. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that is like a ton of people and a lot of things that require attention. And I also heard you once in an interview, I think the TED conference, you said that you didn't really know the difference between net and gross, which I thought is amusing as hell, because my eyes glaze over when I have to look at P&Ls, although I have a guy here in my company who lives for that, which is, I can't even figure that out. But nonetheless, what are the top two or three keys to, I guess, manage or lead an organization as large as yours, if you could even identify those?
Well, obviously you have to be a good delegator, and I mean, we've got something like 350 different companies, and if I hadn't been a good delegator when I only had one company, I most likely would still only have one company. So, well, you've got to try to find people who are better than yourself to delegate to. You've then got to stand back and give them a lot of freedom to make mistakes as well as to make good things. Most likely, you should give them a stake in the company so that they can run it as an entrepreneur, and you're not going to then lose them. Or even worse, they could end up going and competing with you. So they can hopefully do extremely well by staying with you and working with you. I think those are being a good delegator, I think it's the most important first step.
Well, you have 350 companies roughly. And how do you break them up? I mean, what's the structure? Do you, after they get to a certain size, do you spin it off as a new company? Do you report to 350 people that lead all these companies? Or what's kind of the structure of a Virgin look like? Because I'm just trying to get an idea of really how you do it, because I think it's so darn instructional to all of our listeners, many that, you know, just are mom-and-pop operations, to people that are running, you know, very large multi-million dollar organizations.
We have a very flat structure, so each of these companies, you know, have quite a lot of say in actually, you know, making quite big decisions. We are protected against one company going completely haywire and bringing the rest of the Virgin Group down in not effectively having a group. So each of these companies stand on their own two feet. And although, you know, they have a brand which they've got to protect zealously and make sure that doesn't get damaged, you know, if, God forbid, something dramatically went wrong with the company, that it's not going to bring the rest of the Virgin Group crashing down. You know, fortunately, we've never actually, you know, had a company go bust. For reputational reasons, we'll bail out companies that have, you know, do have problems. But if there was an absolute catastrophe, then the group is protected. We have a small central team that the managing directors of those 350 companies will report into, you know, and they will review how the individual companies are doing on a weekly basis and keep a check on things, and that, you know, frees me up to, you know, dive in on the bigger issues. I mean, you know, right now we're, you know, trying to rescue a big bank in England called Northern Rock and turn it into a Virgin Bank that's run into financial difficulties because of the mortgage crisis, and I'm freed, you know, I'm freed up to be able to you know, give that some sort of time and attention and give us the best chance of pulling it off.
I mean, do you ever take complete free days where you do nothing work related? You just simply let your mind just relax and gel and be creative and do what it does? I mean, aside from getting stranded in airplanes in the middle of the ocean or things along those lines, do you schedule actual recovery sort of days and stuff, or are you just constantly always doing stuff?
No, I do. I mean, you know, like the last, you know, couple of weeks ago, you know, I had a group of friends to Necker Island, and pretty well, you know, shut myself off from, you know, from work, and you know, played a lot of tennis, did a lot of kite surfing, did some ordinary surfing, and so, you know, I mean, it's obviously incredibly important to keep the body fit in order to keep the mind fit, and be able to find time for friends, and you know, I'm very fortunate having Necker Island, you know, which we're effectively, it's, you know, or, you know, can invite friends and family and pull up the drawbridge and, you know, walk around all day in a swimming costume and with no shoes and socks on and recharge the batteries. Equally, I do have a small team of people here who can, you know, so that if I need to work, which obviously most of the time I do, I can get my work done as well.
Yeah, well, I mean, you you do so many things that are absolutely hysterical. I mean, there's a lot of things out there that the listeners can pursue too. They obviously can read your book, Losing My Virginity, and they can Screw It, Let's Do It, and also the biography that I think A&E did on you, which, you know, you're in everything from women's makeup for the Virgin Bride thing, which I don't think that one. I don't know what happened to that, but nonetheless, when you're not in tanks or jumping off of buildings and slamming into them and all kinds of stuff, you're always doing a lot of fun things. So, how important is the element of fun? And let me preface this with saying that one of the main things that I teach and to business owners is what I refer to as ELF marketing, which stands for easy, lucrative, and fun. I say you can have an ELF business, which is easy, lucrative, and fun, or you can have a half business, which is hard, annoying, lame, and frustrating. And even if it's lucrative, it could be hard, annoying, lucrative, and frustrating. So I try to infuse as much fun into my business as I can. And my staff and my team, they're actually always trying to calm me down because I'm the goofball. And my office is crazy. I've got all kinds of bizarre stuff. You know, one day I'd love to create enough value for you to where I'd actually have you come down to my headquarters. I think you'd love my building. But nonetheless, you have a really fun organization on all levels. What can all of the listeners learn from you and how you just live life, you know, aside from potentially getting themselves killed by doing life-risking things? What are the fun elements of business that have made you who you are?
Well, I first of all, I think, you know, it's important for people who run businesses to remember that the people who work with them or for them, that for 80% of their lives are going to be spent, you know, doing that. And it's important to realize that 80%, if it's 80% of your life, it should be fun. I mean, it you know, you can take certain aspects of business seriously, but once you've dealt with the safety issues, the rest should be fun and can be fun. And if your staff having a fun time and really enjoying what they do, then the customers who come into contact with them are going to have a fun time and enjoy coming into contact with your company as well. That can then also move on into your marketing. I mean, don't be dry. You know, do it with a sense of fun. I mean, you know, say one example would be, you know, British Airways decided to sponsor a giant wheel opposite the House of Commons, and early one morning I got a telephone call and said all the press were there to watch this wheel being erected, and that they were having some technical issues. So I scrambled an airship which we had a little airship company which was close by, and we put a massive big sign on the back which said, BA can't get it up, and we flew straight over this wheel that was still languishing on the ground, and you know, that is, and just that one little thing, you know, went all over the world, and you know, so I think, you know, again, if you can do things, you know, do things with a smile, do things with a sense of humor, take the mickey out of your competitors sometimes. You know, be willing to accept that they're going to do the same back to you, and again, just not take yourself too seriously. I think that's important. I've obviously gone to extreme lengths in trying to put the Virgin brand on the map. You know, whether it's, you know, trying to be the fastest across the Atlantic in a boat, and you know, or the first across the Atlantic in a hot air balloon, and and I ended up being pulled out of the sea about six times by helicopters. So, you know, that most of that was fun. In retrospect, looking back on it, it was equally, you know, it was foolish as well to an extent. And you know, I mean, one of the other rules about business should be protecting the downside and making sure that, you know, if the worst eventuality happens, it's not going to bring all your companies crashing down. Well, the same should apply to your personal life, but anyway.
But of course, you've probably challenged that at times. Well, you know the saying that there's a fine line between genius and insanity? I mean, this drive that many, many very successful entrepreneurs and just successful people in many areas, from entertainment to actors and, you know, all kinds of levels of high skill. Is there an insane individual living inside most successful entrepreneurs?
Yes, I suspect so. I mean, I think, you know, I mean, well, you have to be a little insane to, you know, to try to fly around the world in a balloon, or you have to be a little insane to, say, go from running a record company to wanting to run an airline. So, you know, you have to be a little bit insane to start fantasizing that you'll be able to take people into space one day, or start thinking that maybe you could, you know, develop a fuel that, a clean fuel over a dirty fuel or whatever. I mean, you know, you've got to, well, not whether the word insane is right, but you've got to, anyway, you've got to love a challenge, and you've got to be willing to, you know, push the limits beyond what other people think is impossible, and never accept no for an answer. And you know, I mean, I suppose a successful entrepreneur just love to prove people wrong, and because 90% of every entrepreneur who's listening to this will know that, you know, the idea that they came up with, or everybody will tell them why they shouldn't do it. The good entrepreneurs are the ones that think, you know, that actually take that as a challenge and want to go out and prove all those skeptics wrong.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, yeah, I think everyone that's accomplished anything in life had to, you know, really at some point in time listen to their own counsel when the rest of the world was saying you couldn't do it, or the majority were cynics or negatives or naysayers or whatever. And I really believe that if you want to have a breakthrough, you got to break something. And you certainly have broken many, many rules and all kinds of stuff. So deep down inside, I mean, what is it that motivates you more than anything? I mean, this risk-taking, to this adventurism, to this taking on a challenge, to this looking at business as a game, or however you look at it, what is that? Where does that come from?
Yeah, you only live once, and I just don't want to waste a minute of my life. So I want to, test myself and test the people around me, and I want to, you know, create wonderful things in this life. And, you know, I have great difficulty saying no, and I'm, you know, now in a position where, you know, there are so many, you know, so many wonderful challenges, you know, still to be tackled. And I mean, there's the awesome challenge of trying to, you know, make sure that the world doesn't destroy itself by continuing to pollute itself. And you know, so we're putting, you know, we've committed to put $3 billion, all the profits from our airline businesses, into trying to come up with clean fuels. And it's, and you know, we're in a position where I think we may well come up with a fuel that can be used in planes and trains and cars that doesn't damage the environment. And it would be incredibly satisfying to be able to pull that off. And hopefully one day my grandchildren will, we'll maybe say thanks to Granddad for, you know, if we can pull it off. But we at least we're going to give it our best shot. There are hundreds of thousands of people who would love the chance to go to space, and if we could do that in an environmentally friendly way, space is not really the last frontier. It's a frontier that goes on forever out there. And, tremendously exciting to see if that can be pulled off, and we think we can pull it off. And 18 months from now, we'll start a whole new space program, and so you know, in this position to make a difference. I mean, you know, I suppose another major thing which we just launched is the Elders Project, which is with Nelson Mandela and Graca Machel and Archbishop Tutu, and that is, you know, to find the 12 most respected people in the world and have them look at conflict situations in the world that are not being addressed successfully by member states or the United Nations might be having difficulty addressing, and, you know, seeing if these 12 fantastic women and men can make a difference. And and I think over the coming years, the elders really could make a massive difference, and that's something which, you know, is obviously pleasing and satisfying to have been in a position with Peter Gabriel to got set up.
Well, I mean, how can our listeners contribute to the causes that you're interested in? I mean, what would you recommend for people to not only constantly find out? And of course, I'm going to do everything I can on my end to get this message out, which is the sole purpose of interviewing you and sharing this with entrepreneurs and with the listeners. But what do you recommend they can do to contribute to some of the causes that you, that you're supporting? Because that's the only way that anything happens, is you get people that you know, build it. They're, and you're a catalyst for so many things. And if it, if you go deep with it, then you absolutely will reduce enormous amounts of human suffering, potentially save the world from itself, and make a heck of a lot more people happier, healthier, and, you know, put a smile on their face. So how can our listeners help?
First of all, as I said earlier, I think if you're building a business and it's in the early days, you shouldn't be expected to do too much, because, you know, I know how difficult it is to build a business, and the important thing is that you've got a strong foundation before you start to try to save the world or help other people. Once you've actually got into the position of, you know, where you feel your business is secure and that you can make a difference, then obviously, you know, we'd love to work with you on you know, seeing if there's areas we can, you know, help together on. You know, maybe if you've got a foundation, we could help work with your foundation, or if you haven't, you know, you might, the people might be interested in working with Virgin Unite, and you know, and we have a website with Virgin Unite, and we have, you know, information on the website on all the different kinds of projects, and, you know, there could be that some, you know, some appeal to you, to people more than others, you know, but if anybody really wants to get involved in a major way, you know, I would suggest they get in touch with you, actually, because you've got my email, and I'd obviously be delighted to hear from anybody.
Wonderful. Yeah, and what I'll do with this interview at the end, we'll give out websites, you know, virginunite.com, of course, people can go, and we'll also give out resources and things, and I will have a website set up where this interview, where people can listen to online and then share it with other entrepreneurs and get more information and listen to my interview with Gene, and just I'll continually keep it abreast and people updated on the things that you're doing and how they can help, because it's a lot of really cool stuff. You know, one of the things that first attracted me to when we had dinner was what you're doing in Africa with teaching entrepreneurism and just literally teaching people how to be more supportive and develop with their own existing resources, how to just be better. I mean, that's I think capitalism and entrepreneurism is what makes the world go around, and what's going to really create you know, the most effect and change, way more than bureaucracy or, I believe, government ever will. Now,
yeah, we have a school in Africa called the Branson School of Entrepreneurship, which is basically teaching kids from the townships, you know, how to become entrepreneurs. I mean, it's not an easy thing to teach. It's, you know, a lot of becoming an entrepreneur is something which, you know, people have to learn just from getting out there and giving it a go, and, you know, having to learn the art of survival. But anyway, we are trying to teach people, and as part of that program, you know, we've got entrepreneurs around the world who are investing in some of these people's ideas. Sometimes they'll be doing it with the idea of making a bit of a return on it. Sometimes they may be doing it, you know, purely for charitable purposes. But you know, but it's quite an interesting project in Johannesburg.